Chapter 22. The second and third river crossings were close together. We'd swim the RV across them in the same day. We reached the second river in the late afternoon, and unlike the first river, where we'd had to hack a ramp down to the water, we expected this one to be an easy drive down into the river for the RV. That's how it appeared from the satellite image. That was not the reality we saw on the ground. The riverbanks on both sides had places where the land led straight down into the water on a fairly gentle grade, easy for the RV's treads. What was not easy was that in those places, the ground at the water's edge was slippery, thick mud. Skippy advised that even our RV's miraculous treads might get stuck. We got out and scouted up and down the river to find a better place to cross. There wasn't one. Our best option seemed to be to hack another road down to the water in a place that wasn't too muddy. On the far bank, we'd need to get the RV to climb the bank as high as it could, then tie a line around a rock and use the RV's winch to pull itself up. It was growing dark by the time we got the road hacked out manually with picks and shovels. I decided against attempting a crossing in the growing darkness and ordered a camp set up for the night. It was a decent evening, dry, warm for Newark, and the following day's forecast was for high winds and torrential rains. People needed a break. To stretch our legs that had grown stiff from sitting in the RV all day, most of us hiked up a hill above the river and watched the sun set. It was only the second time during our entire stay on Newark that I'd seen the local star set over the horizon. Most days there were clouds in the way, or it was solid clouds and rain. Seeing a sunset was a treat. I took it as a good omen. Crossing the second river was uneventful. We all complained what a pain in the ass it was to get the big RV up over the far riverbank. Honestly, every single one of us loved seeing the RV winch itself up, carving a big gouge in the riverbank. The treads got completely, hopelessly clogged with giant clods of sticky, gooey mud, and darn it, we all had to stand in the drizzling rain and watch as the driver, an Indian paratrooper lieutenant named Patel, gunned the throttle and spun the treads clean, flinging mud everywhere as the RV fishtailed up away from the river. And we all laughed and clapped heartily. Patel had such a huge grin that I thought it might crack his face wide open. Damn it, why had I not pulled rank and taken the driver's seat? By the time we reached the third river, the drizzle had become a steady rain. Not yet the gusty downpour we expected from Skippy's weather forecast. Skippy was testy about that, assuring me that just to the north of us was a near-hurricane-force storm. High winds straight out of the north and rain coming down in sheets. We paused the RV to get out and evaluate the river. There was a gentle, grassy slope right down into the water, same on the other side. To the north, the sky was so dark it looked like night was approaching from that direction, and it was only mid-afternoon. The river was rushing fast, icy cold black water, big standing waves piling up over submerged rocks. To my eyes, it appeared the water level was rising as we stood there. Chunks of ice floated by, bobbing on and ducking under the surface as the river bounced them violently. Satellite images showed the long tongue of a retreating glacier jutted out into the river not more than 10 kilometers north of us, out of sight around a bend in the river. Ice was continually breaking off as the river ate away at the base of the glacier. Getting into and out of the river was going to be simple for the RV. The tricky part was going to be avoiding submerged rocks and floating ice chunks. Let's go, I decided. A sudden chilly gust of wind almost made me stagger on the bank of the river, reinforcing my decision. We need to get across before that wind hits us full force. I didn't want the bulky RV acting like a sail in the wind while we were trying to get across the river.
Yes, sir, Smythe agreed. Up in those hills, he pointed across the river, are several good spots we could wait out the storm overnight.
We got back in the RV, shed our wet jackets, and started down the bank toward the river. Our driver was Patel again. He'd taken a break after driving us across the second river. I wanted an experienced person at the controls for this last major river crossing. Patel flashed us a confident thumbs up before the nose of the RV hit the water. Then he focused completely on the task of getting us safely across. The RV bobbed alarmingly once it was fully afloat. The current was so strong that Patel had to point the RV's nose partly upriver in order to hold a straight course. A straight course wasn't going to work. The riverbed was cluttered with rocks we could see and rocks we couldn't see. The RV was a technological wonder, but for some reason,
The Kristang hadn't fitted it with sonar to detect underwater obstacles. We had to guess where rocks were hidden under the surface by watching waves and ripples, something many of us, including me, knew from canoeing or kayaking. A canoe or kayak drew so little water that it could glide over obstacles that were covered by very little water. That was not true of the RV. Its bottom was a meter or more below the surface, and with the pontoons plunging up and down in the increasingly angry waves, at times the bottom of the RV was considerably more than a meter deep. We hadn't gone 50 meters before there was a bump, and the RV ground its way over a submerged rock, a rock too deep to create a standing wave, but deep enough for the RV to bottom out.
"Sorry," Patel said from the driver's seat.
The RV was only hung up on a rock a moment. It popped up and rode over the rock, then Patel needed to swing the RV downstream to avoid another rock. In the seat to the right of Patel was SAS Lieutenant Crispin, scouting for Patel to find a path across the river that avoids underwater obstacles. Smythe suggested Crispin was well-suited to that task. He had gone to the Olympic trials for the British kayaking team.
"Not his fault, sir," Crispin defended Patel. "These rocks are damned hard to see, and his bloody caravan draws too much water."
"Right. Go right," he shouted. Patel swung the RV to the right again, and the RV plunged downstream, rocking and rolling on the rough water. For the next 10 minutes, Crispin and Patel tried to get the RV into the middle of the river, where we hoped deeper water would allow us to avoid hitting rocks. At that point, we had already bumped and scraped over 3 unseen objects. Patel got the RV turned directly upstream and held it in place, while Crispin looked for a way out of the box the RV was in. There were large rocks sticking out of the water to the right, left, and downstream. Upstream was an underwater rock we'd already hit once. We didn't want to run over it again. Skippy said the RV was tough and had an extra tough skid plate on the bottom to protect against the hull getting a hole punched in it from running over rocks. How tough that skid plate was if we hit a sharp rock was something I didn't want to test. "Take your time, Crispin," I said gently. The motion of the RV was almost making me seasick. I wish the RV had more windows.
"And we'll get out of here, sir."
"Oh, shit!" Crispin shouted. Upstream from us, there were ice floes stretching from shore to shore, coming around a bend in the river. A large piece of the glacier must have broken off and been battered into multiple chunks on its way down the river. This was my fault. We knew the river had ice floating down it regularly, and I should have anticipated that with the storm to the north of us, the river level was higher than normal, bringing extra ice. What I should have done was send a couple people upriver, someplace high where they had a view of what was coming, to determine when was a good time for the RV to attempt a crossing. Like an idiot, I blindly ordered us to drive the RV across. Chunks of ice were smashing against rocks, against each other, rolling over, breaking into smaller pieces as the ice flood rapidly approached. "Patel, go straight for shore," I ordered. "As much as you can. I'd rather risk bottoming out on a rock than getting hit with some of that ice." Many pieces of ice were almost half the size of the RV. They could break a pontoon or even knock the RV over in the water. We almost made it. 50 meters from the shore, Patel swung upriver to the left in order to avoid a rock that was barely under the water, and a large chunk of ice slammed into the left pontoon. The impact swung the RV's nose upriver, and the raging water made the nose keep going to the left, out of control. Suddenly, the RV was pointed downriver, gathering speed, headed straight for 2 large rocks. Patel had the water jets screaming in full reverse. He was barely able to hold position.
"I think the left pontoon is taking on water," he shouted. "The RV wants to spin to the left. Crispin, do you see a way?"
His words were cut off by a sickening crunch as the RV was battered again by a small iceberg. Looking out the small window, for a flash, all I saw was a wall of ice, and for a moment my idiotic brain thought of the Titanic. The RV lurched down and to the left as the iceberg hit, then rode up on the pontoon. There was an ear-splitting screech as the pontoon slid along the iceberg. Then it was gone in one direction, and the RV spun the other way. The left pontoon was now clearly battered and sinking. I was sitting on the left side of the RV, and I could tell. Patel reported the left side water jet was operating sluggishly, and I directed him to head straight for shore. The RV was going under. I wanted us to get as close to the riverbank as possible before it went down. Patel did a great job driving. He got the RV downstream from a large rock, semi-protected from large pieces of ice, and headed for the shore using what power remained. The water jet in the left pontoon was barely functioning at that point. The RV grounded on an unseen rock, and we couldn't move.
I think we're stuck, sir, Patel said with regret. The water jets are on full power, but we can't go forward or back.
That was it. I wasn't waiting any longer. Out the front windows, the shore was tantalizingly close. We're sinking. Captain Smythe, get everyone to shore. Williams, you're with me.
I staggered to the back of the RV, Williams and his three-man SEAL team right behind me, and opened the door to the cargo compartment. The RV was sinking fast now, tilted to the left at a 30-degree angle, and judging by the grinding sounds, was being pushed back out into the river. We had less, far less, than a minute before the RV would have slid back away from the riverbank and into water deep enough to be over our heads. In that icy, cold, fast-moving water, it was unlikely anyone who had to swim would survive.
Armor. We need one full set of armor. Leave everything else, I explained.
Between the five of us, six, because Smythe, of course, interpreted my orders broadly and came back into the cargo box with us, we got all the components for a set of armor.
Leave it, I ordered, as Smythe tried to pick up a rifle. That's an order. Go!
Behind me, I closed and firmly latched the door to the cargo compartment where almost all our precious supplies were stored. Water, bitterly cold water, was already collecting around my ankles as we squeezed through the door, bumping into each other as the RV rocked back and forth. Water was pouring in through the right side emergency hatch. I saw people were shuffling along the right pontoon to hop into the water. Patel and Crispin were still in the RV. They'd given up trying to get out the right side hatch, and Patel was working the controls of the roof hatch. He got it open, took hold of the lip around the hatchway, and swung himself through it. At this point, the RV was at a 45-degree angle to the left and bucking like a bronco as it slid backwards, battered by waves. How we all got out, I don't remember exactly. Somehow, both Smythe and Williams got out behind me, even though I'd intended to be the last to leave. By the time Smythe came through the hatch, the RV was almost laying on its left side, and we had to crawl along the right side to the nose, kneel on a front window, and jump into the water. It was up to my chest, and I gasped in shock at the deathly cold. The cold and strong current, combined with the armor suit leg I had a death grip on, made me unsteady. I would have fallen backwards and been swept away, except people had formed a human chain to the shore. Ranger Samuels got a firm grip on my arm and guided me to shore.
Thank you, I told her, and handed the armor suit leg to her once the water was only as deep as my waist.
I stood in the shockingly cold water, trying to ignore it, helping Williams and then Smythe get to safety. More importantly, assuring the precious components of the armor suit got safely to shore. As Smythe, last to leave, jumped off the nose, the RV lurched backwards, partly afloat again. We got onto the shore, me crawling the last meter on my hands and knees, then we all stood in stunned silence for a moment as we watched the RV drift down the river, sinking quickly, until it hit and became wedged between two rocks. Then it slowly disappeared. The right pontoon was visible under the water from time to time in the troughs of waves. Shaking myself back to awareness, I stepped onto a rock so I could see the assembled crowd.
Is anyone hurt, other than wet and cold?
Mild ankle sprains, nothing more,
Dr. Zheng reported as she was kneeling next to Lieutenant Zhang. He had his right boot off and winced as Zheng manipulated his ankle.
I'm fine, Colonel. I stumbled on a rock, Zhang assured me.
Good, I said, stupidly.
Damn, as a commanding officer, I wasn't being very helpful.
Captain Smythe, we have a lot of people in cold, wet clothing here, and a storm is coming.
The wind was now gusting, and rain was occasionally coming down almost sideways.
Find us someplace out of the weather, and make sure everyone uses their heat packs if needed. I don't want anyone getting sick out here.
Everyone had, or should have, chemical packets that could be mixed to generate heat. They're available in any hardware or sporting goods store, not some fancy alien technology.
Lieutenant Williams, you SEALs are our swimmers. Bring the suit components over here. Let's put it together and see what we can do with it.